Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm William.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything tabletop role-playing games.
And today we are talking about Auryl, the Frostmaiden. Hey Brian.
Will, hello.
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 Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Not much. We're about to do a Dungeon Cast.
Yeah, man.
Weird energy to start, but
what are we gonna do today, Will?
Well, you know, it's been rather hot here on the Dungeon Cast, if you ask me. Planes and primordials of fire. Most of the Mephits are very uncomfortable and hot. The battlefields of Acheron seem like they're a pretty sweaty place as well. So I thought it'd be nice to cool things down and air out the show a bit with the queen of air conditioning herself.
We could just open the door to the studio and let the cold Southern California winter air in, which is to say t-shirt weather.
I am wearing a tank top. But you're right. It's cooler than normal.
I hope everybody's staying warm out there in the other parts of the country that are fucked.
Yeah.
15 degrees in Dallas.
Ooh, that's brutal.
Yeah, it gets worse the further you go.
Yeah, no, I know how it is, and I do enjoy California weather, except for during the summer, in which it's a nightmare.
It is pretty fucking hot.
Yeah. But we're not hot today. We're staying chill here in the Dungeon Cast
with
Auryl, the goddess of winter and cold. Now, she is not a prince of elemental evil, but she is both elementalish and quite evil. So I think she fits the year of the elemental pretty well. Regardless, it's back to Faerun on this Deities and Demigods episode of the Dungeon Cast.
Nice.
Auryl is the neutral evil, lesser goddess of winter and cold in the Faerunian pantheon. Although now I would actually quantify her as more of a quasi-deity, kind of like Baal. That being said, she's still categorized officially as a lesser deity, but I'll kind of leave it up to you to decide.
Okay.
She is known by many names. Lady Frostkiss, the Frost Maiden, Stormbringer, the Frost Sprite Queen, and the Sovereign of Summer's End. She is called Sakuruk by her few worshippers among the Ilutuians in the Great Glacier.
Oh, wow. Ilutuians.
Ilutuians. Illusions?
Illusions.
The Frost Sprite Queen is additionally seen as being synonymous with the Queen of Air and Darkness by some communities of Fae, such as those of the Shiverpine Forest and the Deep Wilds. Now, this is a point of some contention that, surprise, has 4th edition at its root. 4E implied that Auryl and the Queen of Air and Darkness were, in fact, the same being in the world of Forgotten Realms.
Okay.
But with the second sundering and the transition to 5E, it became less clear if this was true anymore. And according to Ed Greenwood on Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter, after the sundering, the Queen of Air and Darkness was seen to be only impersonating Auryl in order to retain followers on Toril. I bring this up because I think having the two entities be related in some way is a cool idea, although I totally understand why WotC walked it back. That being said, in my current homebrew D&D campaign where I'm a player, the Winter Queen, i.e. Queen of Air and Darkness, is a major plot point, and her name was revealed to be Auryl. This probably is not a coincidence, as we are playing 4th edition.
For sure. That's everybody thinks WotC stands for Wizards of the Coast. It's actually Walk It Back of the Coast. So that's what they do. They fuck up.
They do that. The embodiment of winter's cruelty and all of its deadliest aspects. Lady Frostkissed has a heart of ice to match her lethally cold beauty, eternally preserved beneath a sheet of rime, though this is but one of her many forms. Oryl has been known to take five distinct forms. The first is a furious figure of action known as the Frost Maiden, the most frequently seen avatar in all but South and East Faerun. The Frost Maiden appears as a lithe, attractive human woman with blue skin and a body made from ice and snow, her free-flowing hair long and white. This form wears a fine, thickly furred gown and a mantle, and with a mantle of frost swirling around her.
Okay, that's cute.
Yeah.
She's well-dressed.
Next is Oryl's form known as the Ice Dawn, an impassive apparition of icy, imperious majesty gliding silently through the air. The Ice Dawn wears an ornate crown and hooked spurred armor of opaque and light blue ice design.
Ooh, cool.
5e presents Oryl with three new avatars. Firstly, there is the Cold Crone, who appears as a 7-foot...
or 2.1 meter...
tall, hunched bipedal creature with a snowy owl's head topped by a pair of curled ram's horns.
There it is.
In this form, she has cloven hooves, arms ending in sharp black talons, and grayish-white wolf fur covering her from the neck down. Her second new form is known as the Brittle Maiden, a 10-foot...
or 3 meter...
tall figure of fearsome feminine aspect with a thin cloak of mist surrounding her and eyes that burn with a cold blue light. Made entirely of ice and frost, her body crackles while she moves, with icy blades growing from her form at odd angles and breaking off after growing too long.
You ever touch like liquid CO2?
I have not.
Or like nitrogen or whatever the fuck, that shit does burn.
Oh, I imagine it would, yeah. Oryl's third form is called Winter's Womb, or the Queen of Frozen Tears by her most devoted. It is a 3-foot...
that's 0.91 meters.
...in diameter diamond of ice with facets and a sharp point at the bottom. Hovering in the air, the diamond contains Oryl's divine spark and radiates intense cold in every direction. Her voice seems to emanate from its heart.
Ooh.
So arrogant, vain, supremely cold, unfeeling, and apathetic, Oryl is incapable of true feelings of love, honor, or other noble emotions. She feels no mercy or compassion, and in fact is sadistic in that she takes great pleasure in torturing her enemies and harassing her foes. She traps those she deems as offenders in blizzards and drives them insane with visions of warmth and the comforts of home, ultimately seeking to kill them with the sheer bitter cold.
And they're like forced to hang out, and they're like if they had like a merchant cart, they're like in there, like drinking from like the mead, like to stay alive.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of people getting trapped? This isn't funny, but like people get trapped in blizzards in their car and they like drink. They had like a 6-pack that they were like toting around in their car, like drink it to survive.
Well, I would imagine it would be detrimental to their survival because it makes you feel warmer, but it actually drops your body temperature when you drink alcohol.
I think it's like a long game thing where they're like in their car and they have been in there for too long and they need to eat.
Yeah, it's nutrients.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. In that case, yeah, that sucks. Yeah, it's terrible.
I've heard of that. That's what your merchant adventures are doing.
I made it 30 days on nothing but 6 cans of beer.
Apologies, adventurer. Oryl has frowned upon you.
In addition to this, despite feeling no love, the Frost Maiden is fascinated with and adorns her ice with all forms of beauty. From natural wonders to art objects to the artists themselves, the Frost Maiden freezes them in magical ice, preserving them from the ravages of time and hoarding them away for her viewing pleasure alone. Her ultimate goal is to cover the realms and all other lands beneath her ice and snow. In addition to this, the ice goddess is notably capricious, fickle, and unpredictable as a winter storm. At one moment, calm and quiet as night, and the next, a raging fury of sleet and ice.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. I mean, she's a weather goddess, you know? And the weather's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And deities highly reflect in the most intense ways the thing which, you know, they are domain of.
If you wait, Oryl was asleep and you woke her up, and so she avalanched your ass. Because you were too loud.
I just got avalanched.
No. I'm stuck in this snow pocket. Better drink this beer.
As one might imagine, Oril, the merciless goddess of cold and winter, is worshipped mostly in regions that are affected by deep winters. Folk attempt to appease Oril with offerings and prayers for mercy. Her priests warn others to prepare for winter and to stock extra provisions in order to have some to spare as offerings to the goddess.
Okay.
Few favor Oril except for those who make their livelihood from winter or those who truly love the season. Her rare priests tend to be folk who would, but for their status, likely be outcasts from their communities. They practice celibacy and remain aloof from others when not serving in their official capacity.
Okay, so if you were going to provide, like, an offering to a random god on a mission, on travel, this is a good one, right?
Yeah, if you're in wintry lands, yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to, like, I need to trek this tundra, like, better make an offering to the goddess.
Yeah, I know a lot of the sailors of Faerun specifically will make offerings to both Saloon and, oh gosh, what's her name? I was going to say Zaboyan, but that's a Dragonlance deity. There's a evil water goddess that they... She's going to come up in this episode, too. She's one of the fury gods, which Oril is one of the fury gods as well.
Ooh, spoilers.
It's super eluding my mind right now. And
but we'll it's in the notes?
Her. Yeah,
it's we'll in get the notes. There.
We'll get there. Luskin, pretty much the most northern major city in Faerun, has a temple dedicated to Oril, the white-spired Winter Palace. The structure is a roofless array of pillars and arches carved of white stone. The rituals of Oril's worship often seem cruel to outsiders. In Luskin, visitors gather at the temple to watch the frequent wet parades, a ritual in which supplicants don garments packed with ice. They then journey between six white pillars known as the Kisses of Oril, which are dispersed throughout the city. The worshippers move from pillar to pillar, chanting prayers to the goddess. Upon reaching a pillar, a supplicant must climb it and then kiss the lady, touching lips to a rusty iron plate at the top.
Ew.
In winter, these events resemble frantic foot races with the added risk of frostbite and injuries caused by falling from the slippery pillars.
I was going to say, you can get really hurt doing this.
Oh, yeah. The parade runners are cheered on by patrons who come out by from nearby taverns to place bets on the stamina of the participants. Those who finish the race are thought to have helped make winter easier, and they rarely have to pay for food or ale all winter long.
Huh. Okay, I guess. This is like watching some fools go out and, like, is this the exploitation of poor people, I think?
I mean, remember that the gods are real in this.
I know, so, I was just about to ask, yeah. Is Oril, like, this is what they want?
I think Aura would laugh really fucking hard at this, and because she's crazy, one year she might be like, yeah, I'll go easy on you guys. Another year be like, you guys are dumb.
Dude, that guy broke his leg, fucking Goomba. Yeah. All right.
She's evil, and...
Lightstorm.
Yeah, superstitions are built because people are desperate to survive her bullshit.
I guess I'll save my watermelon hail for another town. You guys appeased me.
Yeah, that being said, like, someone who does this, because the superstition is real, they really are kind of like a hero, especially if they feel like it works.
Okay.
They're like, fuck yeah, Bob fucking did it this year. No, Bob doesn't pay for shit. Bob, save this city.
We're going to have to remove this man's toes and not charge him medical bills.
Yeah, there you go. The Church of Oril is a loosely organized and informal clergy dedicated to Oril. It'd be weird if it wasn't. Clerics of Oril are mostly women and are known as Chillbringers.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which is a cool name.
Absolutely.
Most are rather independent and wander the colder parts of Toril on their own, spreading word and dogma of their goddess. Oril's clerics wear white ice-white robes with blue trim and a wide silver-colored belt with a ceremonial axe hanging from it. Upon their heads, they wear a circlet of silver.
I thought the smoke method would be a Chillbringer. Too, but it's these
well,
people.
I mean, it is, but it's a that's lower, it's a lowercase c.
Yeah, it's a lowercase c. These Chillbringers, they will leave a box with a smoke method on your doorstep.
Sure. The Church of Oril seeks to make all folk fear their deity and her clergy through the fury of winter weather. They also generate personal wealth and influence by performing tasks that others cannot in the worst weather, and by magically protecting those who pay or obey from the worst winter conditions. Clergy members make an offering of some of the wealth they acquire by scattering it in the falling snow of a storm and throwing it through the cracks of a frozen river or glacial crevice. So basically, the clerics and their goddess bring the bad weather, and then they exploit the people by doing the things in that bad weather only they can do because they're the only ones immune to that bad weather.
Yeah, and at the start of every meeting, they're like, remember, team, if they pray or obey, then they're okay.
I love that. That's great. Clerics of Aurel work to establish themselves as powerful. They work to establish themselves as powerful figures within tribes. They use this power to form a cult and channel a tribe's worship away from their traditional deities and towards Aurel.
Okay.
The tribe is taught to channel their fury towards those not of the tribe as a way to be spared the harshness of winter. So divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
This inevitably leads to the subverted tribe into a life of pillaging and raiding. Sacrifices to the Frost Maiden are common, especially in the north, as people hope to appease the winter goddess and thus avoid crippling cold winters. Travelers forced to travel in the winter toss coins, usually gold or silver coins, into a cold stream or the snow before embarking into the cold. At the first sign of winter, it is common for farmers to throw some of their harvest into the north wind.
And can you imagine, like, looking into the river and seeing, like, a gold piece every now and again?
And knowing, don't fucking touch it.
Or not knowing.
Oh.
And then, like, I don't think the gods are, like, okay with just your regular ignorant people. They, like, fuck up ignorant people anyway, right?
Aurel definitely would.
Yeah.
Like, it just depends on the deity.
Yeah, okay. Like, yeah. Bahamut would find.
Yeah, Bahamut would be like, have you seen my mithril palace? I'm good.
Yeah, he doesn't know.
You need the gold, bro.
Yeah.
Take it. It's all good.
Maybe I'll throw the breeze against his path today as a punishment.
Right. The more fanatical members of her cult engage in human sacrifice. Humans sacrificed to the Frost Maiden are often left tied up to perish from exposure to the cold or drowned in ice-cold ponds.
That's a bummer.
Yes, she's evil.
Those are bad ways to die.
They are. Aurel uses frost giants and winter wolves to deliver commands to her cults, while Frostwind Viragos, which are kind of like winter snow nymph ladies, and hags are the handmaidens of the Frost Maiden.
Okay.
Yeah. Clerics and other worshippers of the Frost Maiden make their prayers during the coldest part of the day or at midnight. Prayers are made while kneeling in deep snow or in a cold stream for as long as possible, sometimes even an entire evening. During the winter months, individuals who approach clerics for a blessing or mercy from Aurel are expected to first undergo a lengthy prayer called a cold cleansing. This prayer involves the individual holding a large piece of ice in their hands, praying until it melts. The prayer has to be done outside in the cold and ideally in the evening. So she makes you suffer. That's like, you want something? All right, suffer.
I was going to say, like, this sounds like getting into ice baths.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, you know, mm-hmm. people have their ice baths sitting on their patio and they just go out there and break the top layer so they can get in.
That's crazy.
Those Russian people, man, they like birth their babies in that shit. Like, this. I saw somebody punch their way out of a frozen lake that like froze over. They got in it right somehow, but the video starts with them punching out of it, and the guy climbs out and they're like, this is how Russians are born.
That's dumb. That's funny. Holy days include Midwinter Night. It's the most holy night of the year for the clergy, a festival of ice dancing that lasts all night. Druids are also known to pay respect to the Frost Maiden on this date, because we've got to remember, druids venerate her too. You know, she's a nature goddess.
Yeah, snow is of the world.
Indeed.
So
the coming storm and the last storm, an informal but enthusiastically celebrated ritual where the priests gather and call howling ice storms down on a region to mark the onset and end of winter.
Oh, wow. It's a weird Groundhog Day situation there.
Aurel's Blessed Tide, or Aurel's Day, is a holiday held annually in the city of Waterdeep on the first day of New Frost in the year. It's not so much a holiday as a way to seek to appease the Frost Maiden in hopes of a mild winter.
It do be getting cold there on the coast.
Mm-hmm. An individual wishing to become part of the clergy must undergo a ritual called the Embracing. The ritual requires the applicant in only boots and a thin robe to spend the evening exposed to a raging blizzard. Holy symbols of Aurel are painted all over the applicant's body. The applicant is forbidden to use any sort of magic to protect themselves from the cold. Those who survive until morning are deemed worthy by Aurel and accepted into her church.
The whole night, I was going to say, I was like, okay, it's probably fun to just go out there for like an hour and be like,
all night, bro.
Oh, all night and just body paint.
Yeah. And the only way you're surviving is literally if Aurel makes you survive, because you will die otherwise.
Oh, that's a fucking crazy one.
But it is crazy to think that every single clergy member, if you're dealing with them in your game, like, they've all done this. So they're all like crazy and
sanctioned by RL.
Too, but they're all like crazy and hardcore enough to do that shit. So they're scary.
Well, I mean, if the culture of it is like, well, if you prayed good then and offered right, then you'll be fine. You know?
Except for that's not true though. Like, you can do all that and RL could just be like, I don't care.
That's true. Or RL needs people to worship. She's probably gonna want to pass crazy fools through.
Enough people get through.
Yeah. Okay.
But they still have to suffer like mightily to get through.
Oh yeah. Not. I can't imagine everybody's getting through.
No, definitely not.
RL's like they've got a warm heart. Fuck them.
Yeah, basically.
I need cold-hearted bastards in my crew. Yeah,
she wants the truly devoted. Mm-hmm. Clerics of the Frostmaiden are bestowed with cold immunity. Powerful clerics have the innate ability to duplicate the effects of the ice storm spell and summon ice para elementals.
Wow.
The church possesses a magic artifact called the Codicil of White. This is a magical book containing basic rites, rituals, services, and major ceremonies of Aril's faith. The book also has several pages devoted to the goddess's favorite arcane magic. Mm-hmm. It was created as a tool for Aurelian wizards and sorcerers to gain better understanding of the faith. Wizards who are loyal or worship the Frostmaiden are called Cold Cloaks. They serve Aurel by providing magical assistance to the clergy.
I like a lot of the naming stuff they're doing in this. A lot of it, sometimes I'll poke fun at that type of stuff. This has all been pretty cool.
Yeah, this has all been good. Good naming. No Aster Eater in sight here. No ball spawn.
No ball spawns, Aster Eaters.
What was the other one? God, what was it? Oh, no
Shet Rings.
Shet Rings over here. Let's take a short rest.
Okay.
It's the Grand Adventures of
Ilion
and
Bian. And so, Bian, that's the story of how I slew the Shardalin dragon and swayed the heart of the ice goddess herself to lift her curse upon the land.
Wow, that was a thrilling tale. It sounds like you had to cast a lot of spells to pull that off.
So many spells.
Wow.
So many.
Love to see one day.
You will.
I'm sure. I assure you, you could cast one right now and we could go back to sleep. And
I'd rather not, honestly.
Yeah, something could happen and we might need... You know, I'm sorry. While you were talking, I don't even think you noticed. You were so lost in your story. And I was listening to the whole thing, but there was a full kitchen that appeared in the lounge space.
Oh, wow.
And I made breakfast burritos.
Oh, amazing.
You're a bacon man, if I remember.
I am a bacon man.
Bacon breakfast burrito for
you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm more of a ham man myself.
Ham is just bacon that isn't cooked all the way.
Well, that's fine. It's a different. You know what? Don't worry about it. You're right.
So, dare I ask, what do we do now, Ben?
I don't know. Those beds that generated here were super comfy. It's just like everything we need is just right there.
Yes, but we can't rest on our laurels. We must venture forth and find the rest of the shards.
I'm not exhausted anymore. I feel good. I think I'm ready to go. Maybe the space in our shards of our fragments of our
shards of substantial support.
We've got three now.
Yes,
they're all sort of fusing together.
Yes.
And breaking apart as it seems they need to. But maybe they can help us find, like, you know, the shards before.
Yes, indeed. I do remember the Elemental Chaos Lightning Skiffer.
Yes.
Told us of a Githzerai that had a shard.
That's right. I thought this is the one we were tracking.
Yes.
And
then
the whole Acheron business.
Yeah, then we Acheron, and then we found another one. So perhaps the shards are so bound together, perhaps we could will these three to find this Githzerai.
Oh, there was a wash basin and some OxyClean that generated here. I did get that blood out of your coat.
Thank you.
There was a lot of blood on your coat.
I killed a lot of people.
You killed so many people.
Ben, listen to me.
I'm sorry, I'm listening.
I need you to paint.
Okay. I love to paint.
Good.
You know that.
Yeah, I do. Get to painting.
What should I paint?
Whatever you want.
I'm going to paint the lounge.
And I shall take these three shards, hold them forthwith, and will them to take us to the place where we need to go to find this Githzerai who holds another shard so we can make our shard just that much bigger and more powerful!
That sounds great. I wonder what was up with that dude. He really didn't like the Githzerai.
Ben, you're not painting!
Okay. Well, I got confused because there's all kinds of stuff I've never seen. There's an art station generated over here next to my canvas, and there's all kinds of mediums and munitions of art supply. There's art supplies I've never seen before. Like, what is this? It's in some sort of strange hard but somewhat flimsy casing. It feels like I could break it. But look, this little cap pops off. And there's something wet. And look, there's multitude of colors of them. I can't read whatever this language is on the side of them.
Ben, do I look like an artist to you?
No.
You are the artist. So please make some art so that we can get this going.
Okay. Here I go. I'm drawing.
Yes.
Look, I'm drawing the lounge.
Yes. Show us. Shards as essential supporters. Show us where we must go to find this Gisharai.
Oh, look, it's doing another teardrop.
A portal.
A tear. A tear in space.
Tear in space.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're fucking back.
Indeed we are.
Colder than ever.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit cold. It's finally gotten to me.
I turned that
bit.
Heater off like I was saying.
Yeah, that'll do it. I am wearing a tank top.
That's true. You did choose like some of the...
It was comfortable when I went outside this morning. I know it was 30 degrees, but it felt great.
Ever since we insulated the studio, it actually holds the cold.
It does.
Yeah.
Which is good for the summer.
It's good for the summer. It holds the heat. It's a thermos up in here. It's just going to hold whatever temp it is. But if you cool it down, it stays a little. Yeah, you're right. What did Ilyin and Beren do? We don't know, but probably chill as fuck. It was
probably super chill.
It was probably super duper chill. We have a thing of dice up here.
We do.
Full of cursed dice.
It's a giant jar.
How many?
You guess.
How many?
Whoever gets closest without getting over wins.
And if there's a tie, you got to tell us the color ones.
Yep.
Which color is the most?
Indeed.
That's actually probably pretty good. If it does come to a tie, it'll be kind of hard for us to parse that out, like categorizing which ones are truly red. You know what I mean?
Hey.
We'll do our best. It probably won't
result. Air is mortal.
Yeah.
Is all I will say.
We're so fucking mortal.
We're so goddamn mortal.
God damn it, Demogorgon. Help.
Let me become your warlock.
Oh.
You ready to get back to it?
Yeah, I'm ready to get back to it.
All right, back to Oryl. Oryl used to have a divine realm called Winter's Hall, and Pandesmos, the topmost layer of pandemonium in the Great Wheel cosmology.
What? I didn't know pandemonium worked like that. Pandesmos.
Whether that hall still exists or not is unknown to me. But what is known to me is that she definitely does not live there anymore.
Okay.
The second sundering did a number on quite a few of the deities of the Forgotten Realms, and Oryl is definitely among this number. Before we get into her current domain, I must issue a warning. We are now crossing into spoilers for the adventure module, Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frost Maiden. Ye who wish not to hear of such things should leave now. You have been warned.
You've been warned. These are cold-ass spoilers.
Cold.
They don't care about
fuck
you.
Spoilers.
They
don't care about you.
You mentioned the owl with the horns.
Yes.
And that's the alt art for that book. And I was wondering if we were already in spoilers for it. Not really.
We now are.
Now we
are.
We're
about to be.
Get ready for the spoilers, motherfucker.
So let us begin with a quick recap of what the Second Sundering was. I know we've talked about it a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
But as 5e was coming into production, WotC wanted to put the 4e Pandora back in its box. And so to do so, they invoked the power of their writers to create and write an event called the Second Sundering, which would put mostly everything in the world of Forgotten Realms back to where it was pre-4th edition D&D.
It's like a Crisis on Infinite Earths kind of scenario.
Yes. Not everything made it back to whence it came or did so completely unscathed, but the status quo was indeed again quite quo in the eyes of 4E haters.
Walk it back of the coast.
In the lore, though, what happened was...
They got fucking sundered again. I can't believe we're being sundered a second time. Keep your head down.
When Ao, the Overgod, Everything Dad...
My Everything Dad.
...destroyed the Tablets of Fate at the conclusion of the Times of Troubles, he instigated the era of upheaval. The Tablets defined the laws of realm space and kept it relatively stable. Without them, chaos ensued, and the worlds of Iberia Toril, separated many thousands of years ago, slowly started to overlap. Also, the Spell Plague happened, and coincidentally drastically sped up this process.
Shout out to the Spell Plague.
Basically, Ao made a uh-oh.
Not my everything, Dad. He fucking scrapped up his Fablets of Tate. It's actually just the Fablets of Tate are just Andrew Tate telling you how to get more testosterone in your diet and like the most fantasy way possible.
I don't want his name on this show. How dare you?
I'll probably cut it out.
Please. The Second Sundering started with Ao's decision to recreate the Tablets of Fate. He realized, I made a mistake.
Now we need these tabs, bro. Sorry.
And to separate the worlds of Iberia and Toril once more, the deities were unsure of what this would do to them and their power and made efforts to using their most powerful servants to prepare for the event.
Dad's up to no good.
He's
all hands
Dad's
on deck.
Dad's doing something. It's going to be big.
Well, I thought Ao knows like all the stuff, and he meant to do this.
I mean, I don't know. To me, it reads like a fuck up, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Long story short,
you think he like crushed him and like blew him out like over his hand? Yeah.
Say hello to 4th edition.
That was cool. Yeah. Odd. Oops.
Oh god, 4th edition sucks.
Damn.
Oh shit, what have I done?
Hey, Will wakes up from a dead sleep. No, it doesn't. It's just another dream. God damn it, Ao.
Long story short, over a 10-year period, the spell plague was fixed. The map of Faerun reverted to its old geography. New gods died or were ungodded. Old dead gods were revived and regodded. The world axis cosmology reverted back to the great wheel cosmology. And all gods were essentially given a choice to either keep their godly status, but not be able to interfere in the world directly, save for invoking Ao's wrath, or lose a great deal of their divinity and power, but still be able to remain and affect the world directly.
Shout out to the spellplague again. That was a long sentence.
Most deities, that was that one sentence? God, I
write. That was a whole paragraph.
Most deities, that was on one breath.
I think some of these commas should probably be
You're
periods.
Probably right.
Yeah.
I don't have an editor. That's all good. I don't have an editor for this show.
No, I think like it works the way you read. Yeah. No, it's fine. I pulled the curtain back. Thanks. And so can you on Patreon. You can look at the notes.
So true. Most deities chose the first option, which was the we want to still be gods, and we swear we won't touch it again. Dad, sorry.
Sorry, Dad. He's like, yeah, that's right. You better be fucking sorry.
Don't make me destroy the Tablets of Fate again. Sixth edition. Sorry. But some, for one reason or another, ended up on the wrong side of the AO wall. Orill is one of these gods. And as such, she has lost a great deal of her original power. Her power level is still listed as lesser deity on the Forgotten Realms wiki, but I would argue that it should probably be reduced to quasi-deity status, much like Baal. But I will let you decide.
Yeah, Diggy, let us know what you think.
I poked and bugged Diggy for a couple things on this, but I didn't ask him that question. And I do want to know what he thinks. Orill the Frost Maiden, the divine embodiment of Winter's Fury, has withdrawn to a far cold corner of the world known as Icewind Dale to live among mortals. Now, when I say Icewind Dale is really far north, I want you to remember that we just spoke about the city of Luskin, the northernmost major city in Faerûn. If Luskin is Vancouver, Canada, then Icewind Dale is Fairbanks, Alaska. It is very far up there.
It's extra far.
It's super far up there, yeah.
You got to spend an extra 7 days on a boat, on a cruise ship
something
to get there.
Like that. Something like that, yeah. Now, unfortunately for the denizens of Icewind Dale, Orill has not merely moved in next door. She has decided to make her residency everyone else's problem and has cast a terrible spell over Icewind Dale to the detriment of most living things. I do need to add here, I was talking to Diggy about this, and he's of the opinion that this is no longer occurring. And we're going to get kind of into spoilers of on the Rime of the Frost Maiden, because that adventure can end in a few ways.
Okay.
The thing is, we don't have anything at all on Orill after the adventure. So all we know is where she's at during the adventure. And then, of course, more than a couple of the endings basically end with Orill still here doing her shit.
Yeah, if you guys want to know more about Forgotten Realms-centric deities and gods and stuff, it's Deities of the Realms, right? It's Diggy's podcast?
Religion in the Realms.
Religion in the Realms. Yeah. And you guys should go check out Religion in the Realms. We'll link it in the description of this episode, too.
Yeah.
So thanks, Diggy, for your help. And he really is a good expert on this stuff. You can check out, you can talk to him in the Discord, too.
Yeah.
He's like our admin guy.
Yeah. So anyways, she's cast a terrible spell over Icewind Dale to the detriment of most living things. Each night before midnight, Orill takes to the sky on the back of a white rock. You remember what a rock is?
Or yeah,
super mega big eagle?
Yeah, yeah, super mega big eagle. This one's white.
Yeah, this one's white. And weaves her spell, which manifests as a shimmering curtain of light, a beautiful aurora that illuminates the night sky and fades before dawn. This powerful magic prevents the next day's sun from rising above the horizon, turning midday into twilight and trapping Icewind Dale in winter's dark embrace, with no sunlight or warmth to melt the snow and ice. Each casting of the spell leaves the Frost Maiden weakened, with just enough divine power left to barricade the mountain pass with blizzards and churn the sea of moving ice with blistering winds.
Beautiful.
So she's keeping everyone out.
Okay. With her Wonderwall?
Mm-hmm. Such measures discourage travelers from approaching or leaving Icewind Dale, further isolating the region. Icewind Dale has thus been trapped in a different reality from the rest of the world. For though the sun never rises over the dale, it continues to rise everywhere else.
Interesting.
The people of Icewind Dale have come to call this state the Everlasting Rime. No one understands why the Frost Maiden has imposed her will in this way, or why the other gods refuse to challenge her this prolonged winter. So we're still, I mean, at this point, I guess we're kind of 10 years into 5e, but I feel like canonically we're still pretty early into the gods aren't allowed to do shit.
Oh, yeah, part. I see that. Okay.
So Baldur's Gate 3, mild spoilers for that. But like, people pose the question, why don't the gods do anything? And you kind of get, spoiler, Elminster's in the game. And he's like, well, they kind of can't. And yeah, anyways.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, so back to this. This prolonged winter, which has gone on for more than 2 years, threatens to doom not just the flickering lights of civilization known as Ten Towns, but also the indigenous flora and fauna that needs sunlight and the change of seasons to survive.
Auril does not give a shit.
No, she
doesn't. Fuck that flora and fauna.
Yeah. Now, is she still here in Icewind Dale after the adventure is over? I suppose that depends on how your individual game went. As for the canonical ending, it is unclear, and this is essentially the most up-to-date information that I have, or any of us have, at the time of us recording this. So I'm going to treat it as if she's still living in Icewind Dale and still fucking everything up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because...
Seems about right.
Yeah. And also, again, spoilers for Frostmaiden, Rhyme of the Frostmaiden, is you can kill her, but... In the DM notes, it says if she dies, she will come back and she will start doing this again. So it's like, it reads as if she's still up there.
The same old stuff. So no matter what happened, you are going to have Auril doing weird
up
shit there.
Yeah. Like maybe she ended the part where everything's like region locked. But
yeah.
She'll still be up there probably.
Yeah. In her own little frozen bubble.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Until we're told otherwise. Yeah. Auril the Frostmaiden has retreated to a floating island of ice and snow. And on it, the fortress of Grimskull. Grimskull, eh?
You've been hanging out with me for too long. Grimskull. It's Grimskull.
Grimskull will take you to the limit. Sorry.
That's
please,
good.
Please cut that.
I don't know. I might keep it.
I'm sorry. So, Fortress of Grimskull, built by Frost Giants, now serves as her abode. Her presence makes the island the most frigid place in the far north. The cold is unbearable for many visitors whose corpses become part of the island's frozen decor. Around the island, titanic icebergs bob in a churn of black sea of unknown depth, crashing into one another with destructive results. Using sheer force of will, the Frostmaiden can anchor the island or cause it to slowly drift about. For that reason, the island doesn't appear on maps of the Sea of Moving Ice because no one knows where it is when.
That's why they're all crashing into each other, because they're titanic icebergs. Womp, womp.
The island itself is named the Island of Solstice, and it is shaped like a snowflake.
Cool.
With six jagged arms that protrude out into the sea. It is a windswept place made primarily of snow and ice. Grimskull was constructed for a frost giant queen named Vasavikin, and is filled with the remnants of her reign, including her corpse. It is located dead center on the Isle of Solstice, set between gardens of ice sculptures formed by the Frostmaiden's ice magic. The fortress resembles an imposing skull adorned with a horned crown. The entirety of its structure is formed of carved ice that emanates a mist of icy air, standing 600 feet.
That's 180 meters.
Tall from the base to peak. A Grimskull has three levels, along with a rooftop that has well-fortified battlements. Auril's rock companion, Iskra, nests atop the roof of Grimskull, as a number of ice mephits sit along the walls like gargoyles, and a particularly intelligent giant walrus named Akuma dwells within its dungeon.
Oh, that's fucking cool.
It is pretty cool.
A giant ice walrus.
Yeah, with a name.
This is all, a lot of this sounds familiar. You've already told me that you put mephits, or I played in the game where you put gargoyle ice mephits in.
Yes.
I played in another one of your games where I named something vague walrus.
Yeah, there's a came out of an walrus monster that came out of an ice lake, yes. That's true. Auril doesn't really have any friends, only enemies. In earlier centuries, Auril was a member of the Deities of Fury, along with Malar, Umberlee, that's the one I couldn't think of earlier, and Talos, and used their combined destructive powers to inspire much reverent fear and tribute. Her relationship with Talos was said to be a close and cordial one, but this was no obstacle from his attempt to usurp her following, and she preferred not to rely on him due to his habit of responding, but then directing all the glory to himself.
Okay.
Meanwhile, she and Malar mutually hated each other. Umberlee was the only one she could cooperate with to some degree of confidence, but eventually the wrathful sea goddess came to despise her enduring cold and the motionless sheets of ice her roiling seas were turned into, forming an alliance with the other gods of fury against her. So she got kicked out of the band.
Right. Yeah.
Like, basically, totally. It's like her and, like, okay.
Does not play.
She was
well
only invited because she was dating Talos. Talos was a dick. They broke up. Her and Malar already didn't like each other. And then Umberlee was like, you know, I don't like you either. So you got to go.
Yeah. That tracks.
So following,
I think I've seen that. I think I've been to a party where that like happened.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Following the spell plague, Oryl gained significant power by siphoning the face of Ulutiu, Eredrefianya, and Grumsh/Talos into her own. In addition to her classic portfolio of cold and winter, the Frostmaiden claimed dominion over wind and storms, bringing her into direct conflict with the ancient primordial power Akkadi.
Shout out to the spell plague. I got three on this app.
You did. I mean, it's a Faerun episode that's super tied to the second Sundering, so
this is
going to
be
happen.
A great year.
Oryl
shouting out to Demogorgon and the Spell Plague.
We'll have to do an episode on the Spell Plague.
Oryl, yes, episode, whatever
what
the
next. What do you know about the Spell Plague? What do you know about the Spell Plague?
It was bad for Mystra.
It was
super
bad
duper bad.
Okay.
Which most things that happen to Mystra are very bad.
Yeah. Okay.
Or Mistral. And the magic did bad. The magic did bad.
We've
talked about the spell plague quite a bit, but it just keeps fucking coming up.
We have, but we haven't. Like,
right, exactly.
Yeah,
just like Demogorgon. This is a very reminiscent of our first 100 episodes.
All right.
We just don't have a book with the spell plague on it. You know what I mean? Sitting in the background.
We'll
of
do
some
an episode
videos.
On the spell plague.
It'll be episode 400. Let's do episode 400 spell plague.
Okay, I'll try.
Hell yeah, I'll do it.
Okay, no, I'll do it. Oryl and Shantaya are mortal enemies. I don't know if you remember who Shantaya is. She is
vaguely.
Saloon and Char's on-purpose daughter versus their accidental daughter, which was Mistral. Mm. She is the earth. She's the spirit of the earth.
Okay.
And she don't like Oryl. Oryl makes her cold. She don't like it.
Yeah.
Constantly that's battling each other.
That's why the other gods don't do anything. They can't do anything about it, but they also wouldn't because it's cold over there.
Sune opposes Oryl as she blames her for the destruction of much that is beautiful. Uthgar despises Oryl because the Elk tribe abandoned him for her faith.
Okay.
So, I mean, I wouldn't like her either.
He stole my followers.
God damn it. I'm not even god anymore. At one stage, Oryl was in a relationship with Thrym, god of the frost giants. During that time, she became the mother of an Empyrean daughter named Nalkara.
Well, she's a wanderer. She'd just be around Oryl.
Yes, absolutely.
She's kind of Roman.
She's like the wind.
She's out in these Faerunian streets.
Indeed, but not actually in the streets. She likes it in the wild. anything you want, any questions about Oryl? Any additives, comments, concerns?
Cool piece to play with. Cool to have around.
Yeah.
Very cool. And I don't know. I'm mostly just excited for our Spell Plague episode now.
All right. Well, with that being said, let's get ready for a long rest.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest. This is the part of the episode where we kick back and get cold as hell. We're the coldest motherfuckers in the game. It's me and Will.
That's what they say about the Dungeon Cast.
The
coldest motherfuckers in the game.
Yep, they call him Chillium.
Chillium and... I don't got one for Brian, I'm sorry.
Just Brian.
Chillium and Brian. No, Brime. Like rhyme.
They call him Brycey.
There we go. Chillium and Brycey. I hate it. It's terrible.
It's the worst. Oh, man. That would be a cool shirt. Anyway, I'm just going to say that a bunch and like maybe one of them will make it to the thing.
Maybe.
You know? Okay. So, these slippies are just blocks of ice that I've melted my feet into. I'm going to lose them. I'm going to lose all these toes.
Well, you know, that's what Oryl would want.
That's what Oryl would want. But if I make it through the night with these slippies on, they'll be impervious to getting cold ever again.
That's true.
And I can make ice mephits come out of my pinky toenail.
That's really gross.
Poof, poof. The tiniest ice mephits. They'll stabby stab you. They'll look like the crust on the side of the market freezers that I used to eat.
I hate where this is gone.
There's a YouTube comment. Remember that YouTube comment where somebody was like, I used to do that, bro. They also used to eat the ice from the
Ring of Winter thing. I do.
Oh, man, I was a weird kid. Okay, well, they had those long ones that were like the size of an entire aisle. Like, mm-hmm. That would just run down the middle of what frozen section or whatever. It's just exposed. The whole thing's got that delicious looking ice crust.
I've looked at it and be like, oh, that's definitely a feeling I get.
You know, when you're seven, things look different.
Things do look different when you're seven.
Yeah. Like, look at the waffle container over here. It's got a lot of ice crispies. Quick update on my dragon turtle, Sally. A boy named Sally. We're just leaning into that. He is surviving the we do have like freezing temperatures at night, and they just burrow below the frost line. I did put like a, I installed some heating out there, ran some power out there again, put the heater up, building a new enclosure. So there hasn't been a lot of Sally updates. They're not very active right now. They come out and absorb some that precious sunlight. I looked out there. I went to go get waters, and I looked outside of the studio for Sally and did not see Sally yet. But next time I get a good photo op, I'll put it up there. You can follow me on Sound Good Inc. on Instagram, or I guess Threads, because everybody got like an auto account for Threads that has an Instagram.
True.
I was thinking about live tweeting my at-home games. I think that would be a fun thing for content on Threads.
So what, just like grab a shot? Hey, we're about to play, or
like we're about to play as like my cleric just became invisible and like let a guy die. That's like something that happened once.
Well, I can't wait to play because it sounds like a fun game.
I'll just like throw dumb snippets of stuff into the like as we play.
Yeah.
That might be a fun thing I might do.
Could be cool.
I'll take a group photo of us at the table. I got to start getting back to that. I used to do that when we play. I'd be like, okay, everybody, group photo. I should start doing that again every time I play D&D. Mm-hmm. Have like a, you know, like a slideshow of like groups. Like
that sounds adventuring. Good, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that you can expect that from me on there, not much. We have other social media, though, that is like more show-centric.
It's very true. The Dungeon Guest can be followed on Instagram, Threads, Mastodon. We have a Discord. Mm-hmm. All links are in the description. I'm trying to be more active on the various social medias. I'm probably the most active on Discord, but the Discord is more about the community than it is about us. So I highly recommend you guys go there if you want to be part of a really cool D&D community that loves D&D and is super friendly.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with all of that. You want to read some YouTube comments?
yeah, let's do it.
Will did the Tragedy of Zariel the Fallen. That's got a ton of comments, but they're all the same. Do more of these. This was awesome.
Right.
So good job.
When you do look at comments, make sure to shut off the ones that you haven't responded to.
Oh, I always do.
Okay,
yeah.
Because otherwise we'll miss all the fun comments that we loved.
Yes. Let's see. How about the Elemental Chouse? Should we read comments from that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Or 9 most ridiculous items of magic items of D&D.
Whichever you want.
Okay, let's do the Chouse. Let's see. Comments on the Chouse. Let's see here. Yep, let's click. I haven't responded. I'm reading these. Like when you do YouTube content, you get access to this app, YouTube Studio app. We can like view all our stats and stuff in there. I'm sure if you guys follow other YouTubers, they like screenshot analytics from there sometimes. Let's see. We got Crow with Teeth 7693 says, I'd love an episode about traps, hazards, and puzzles. It's one of those things that's hard to really learn as a new DM. I agree, which is why I suggested it. So we're going to just heart and thumb all these as I read them. Matt Castleberry, 15. Oh, and we will do that episode, I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it'll come up this year at some point.
We will fit it in.
Matt Castleberry, 1542, says, thank him, gotta thank them all, Patreons. I still really want to do that song where we Pokemon rap style all our patrons.
I am super into it.
Archialunas, 4043 says, it's the year of the elemental, party face emoji.
Hell yeah.
It is. Preston Garner, 8796, says, are you going to talk about the positive plane and the negative plane?
Eventually.
Little Crow YT says, I love 4E, and I'm glad somebody else has noticed and talked about how much 4E actually did for D&D mythology and cosmology, not saying it was non-existent before, because it most certainly was present, but it was cobbled together over years of core books, splat books, magazines, side books, etc. 4E tried to bring it all together in the core books and fleshed out different aspects that hadn't ever been fleshed out before, though it has also left some stuff out, like the full alignment chart, even though 5E and 1D&D are both trying to do away with it as a concrete axis and more of a background tertiary aspect of the game. I've been a strong proponent of 4E since shortly after it released, when my rogue pulled an anime move that was hype as fuck. Sweaty face.
Yeah, you
want to
do a cool anime move? 4E is the addition for you.
100%.
It's just all cool anime moves.
And my love for that era has only strengthened over the years. I especially love what 4E did for spirits and animism. in D&D, and that's one of the things that strongly inspired me to world build myself.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Long comment, but a nice one. Good stuff, Little Crow YT. 1-2-3, the big dog says, so I DM'd a game where a while back with the evil earth elemental Ogremok. It was a fun game.
Hell yeah.
Onyx D. Dixon says, there's a Spencer's next to a Hot Topic at my nearby mall.
That was our, God, what were we even talking about the episode? We were like,
the Shadowfell and the Feywild.
Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, because Spencer's is so morally ambiguous and everything that they have in their store.
Yeah.
You could buy, like, at one point, you could buy, like, fucking Confederate flag stuff, butt plugs, like, lava lamps, like, Bob Marley posters.
Yeah.
It's just like whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's Spencer's
gifts. And you know what you can find in the Hot Topic. Gray, black.
Yeah, I
red,
guess so.
Red.
Lots of anime stuff these
anime,
days.
Anime.
Lots of anime stuff these days.
A lot of anime stuff. Andy English 4303 said, oh, they've got Doc Brown as their profile picture. That's cool. Genie appeared in 4E's Monster Manual 2, while Marids and Dao eventually showed up in Dungeon Magazine. Apparently, they saw having one genie type for each of the four elements was redundant and just kept the ones most commonly fought and the ones most commonly friendly to the party.
Yeah, it was one of 4E's blunders for sure. Just Ifrit exist, and we're not really going to talk about the other ones.
Yeah. My wife's going to come in here and get her purse while I read these YouTube comments, so don't mind the background noise. Wes WTF 2562 says, fish suits are a spelljammer magic item. They let your players ride the lightnings. That's cool. Fish suits. Sir Nunos lives. Once again, they're back.
Indeed.
I absolutely love this episode. Talking about the little-known aspects about how our favorite make-believe universe is made. It really fleshes out how any campaigns can be expanded on. Great upload, my brothers. Your D&D gung-fu is adequate and on its way to becoming legendary, my grasshoppers. Smiley face emoji. Oh, and a new D&D magic consumable, Baird's Cream of Wild Stew, is a warm cup of chaos soup. It's always warm and always changing tastes. Roll for random effects. Good luck.
That's cool. Interesting, yeah.
Daddy AF 945, the introduction of the elemental Chouse was the best thing ever. Planes devoted to the individual elements was so dumb. Blended planes make pacing faster and eliminated the garbage physics problems like infinite oceans or Earth that were a slog.
I like having them both. I just don't like how, because 5e brought the inner planes back, they've really kind of turned them elemental chaos into something super boring. I'm like, why can't I just have my cake and eat it too? I like the inner planes and the quasi-elemental planes, but I also want my elemental chaos to be fucking awesome like it is in 4E.
It was a controversial comment. There were three replies on it, and I'm not going to read them because it's a little bit of back and forth, but you know, there it is, and you kind of stepped in for them anyway. Wallypuff, what up, Wallypuff? I feel like the reason 5e has so little info on the elemental chouse is because it's kind of unnecessary if there's limbo in the abyss and elemental planes in 5e. I almost think it could have stayed in 4E, but it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it could have, but at the same time, I don't know. I feel like the elemental chaos does have kind of its own little vibe compared to Limbo. I would say Limbo's the closest thing to it, though.
Yeah, I think it's just like, what style of game do you want to run? We've got it all. We're going to include this because we have it.
Yeah.
Austin with AM, with Austin Witham, 109. I've got a campaign in progress, about half done, in which the Slod have used the material plane and a group of gullible druids to channel the energy of the elder elementals and rip open a gate to Limbo and eventually consume all the inner planes and finally the material plane into Limbo. The end of goal, of course, being the destruction of Mechanus, allowing chaos to rule the planes themselves. The Slod throw in behind the demons and end the Blood War to get a sufficient force to sweep through the upper planes. The raw elemental chaos will tear even the demon lords to pieces, and all that's left to warp the cosmos to their will are the Slotty. That's got some comments on it, too. Yeah. Edward Aponte, 942, says, animatics of the short rest adventures would be amazing.
Oh, yeah.
They make 100% would
make
be.
Make them happen, people.
Huh?
It's a make them happen, people.
Somebody out there, an animator. If you do animation, there's a chance we might need one for YouTube in the near future. So hit us up. Let's see. Lorenzo 4637. Heck yeah. Year of the Elemental. I'm here for it.
Oh, cool. And yeah, I'm excited for it too.
Wraith Reaper 22, a longtime commenter of not only this show but Super Quest Saga, who I'm very grateful for, says, "Here for the chouse."
Hell yeah.
Me too, Wraith Reaper. Me too. Let's call it a game.
Yeah, let's call it a game. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.